is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America, an update on the race for the White House. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. After decisive wins in New York's primary elections, Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton are now looking to new elections in five states next week to solidify and extend their lead over their remaining challengers. After capturing almost all of New York's Republican convention delegates, Donald Trump declared that his chief rival, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, is just about mathematically eliminated from winning the nomination before the national convention in mid-July. Mr. Cruz, known as a conservative firebrand in the halls of Congress, did not win any convention delegates in New York voting, but is trying to keep Mr. Trump from winning a majority of the convention delegates on the first ballot in hopes of winning the nomination on the second or succeeding ballots. Ohio Governor John Kasich came in a distant second in New York, and while he picked up several delegates, he is far behind his rivals. Real estate mogul and one-time television reality show host Donald Trump, who has never held elective office, needs to claim about 53% of the remaining delegates yet to be chosen in the 15 states where elections are scheduled through early June to clinch the nomination ahead of the Republican National Convention. After his crushing loss in the New York State primary to Hillary Clinton, Democratic contender Senator Bernie Sanders is under intense pressure to win the Pennsylvania primary next Tuesday or fall even further behind Mrs. Clinton's sizable lead in pledged delegates. Unlike the frontrunner on the Republican side, Hillary Clinton's campaign has carefully avoided any suggestion that Senator Sanders quit the Democratic presidential race. However, many of her prominent supporters have argued that the moment has come for Mr. Sanders to ease off attacks for the good of Democrats in the November general election. Well, with us to discuss the state of the race for the White House in the run-up to the Democratic and Republican conventions are John Fortier. He's a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. That's a centrist policy group based here in Washington. And Igor Volsky. He's deputy director of the Center for American Progress Action Fund, and that's a liberal think tank here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Once again, gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, John Fortier, let me begin with you. What did we learn from the New York primary? How is it clarified or not the race for the Democrats and the Republicans?
Well, I'll start with the Republicans. There have been a lot of swings back and forth, and I think we are still in the position of wondering, will Donald Trump get a majority of the delegates in the convention, or will we have an open convention? New York was a very good day for Donald Trump. It had come on the heels of some bad weeks for Donald Trump, where he seemed to be losing out to Ted Cruz in especially ways that Ted Cruz and his very organized campaign were to go into states and organize delegates not through the elections, but through conventions and other more insider processes. And Trump was criticized for really not being able to keep up with Ted Cruz. We came to New York, his home state, and not only did we know Donald Trump would do well, he did exceptionally well. He won more than 50%, taking all the state delegates. He won in most of the districts, almost all of the districts, more than 50% there. John Kasich may have eked out a win in one of the districts. So really about as well as you could do in New York for Donald Trump. He also has coming up another set of states in the Northeast where it looks pretty good for him next week in Pennsylvania, Maryland, up in New England, in Rhode Island and Connecticut. So this will be a good time for Donald Trump. I think what we'll have to do is look ahead. There's some states ahead where we don't know what will happen, and then there's the final day in June where California and other states will vote. We're on the edge. Do we know if Donald Trump will make it to the nomination? We don't, but he may. It was a good day for him. And I guess the other thing I would say is that he has shown some signs of trying to really upgrade his campaign, bring in more professionals, some of them really more connected to the Republican Party, as he has had a very outsider campaign, small campaign, untraditional campaign. That may bode well for him. Quickly on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton had a very good win also. Bernie Sanders has a hard path to get the number of delegates that he needs at the Democratic convention. Hillary Clinton has the lead in votes, in pledged delegates, but also in the so-called superdelegates. So it was a good win for her. I think Bernie Sanders will still be in the race. It's hard to get to that majority for Hillary Clinton because the states are proportional and it takes some time. But it was a good win for Hillary Clinton in her home state as well.
Terrific. Let me turn now to you, Igor Volsky, for your take on the state of the race after the New York primary.
Yeah, John summed it up well, and I agree. It's going to be very difficult, almost nearly impossible for Bernie Sanders to now win the nomination. So he has a decision to make. Does he stay in the race and put forward the kinds of ideas that he's been running on, the kinds of ideas that have attracted massive crowds and have really energized the Democratic Party? Or does he really kind of continue going after Hillary Clinton in the way that he has been in these last couple of days, which is hitting her for being allegedly corrupt, kind of echoing a lot of those criticisms that you hear from Republicans? Certainly the Hillary campaign is saying that that kind of rhetoric, that kind of approach only weakens her and weakens the party as you move into the general election. But that's a decision that he's going to have to make. And in some respects, the primary election is now over on the Democratic side, and you really kind of get into a character race for Bernie Sanders, and he has to decide what kind of candidate he wants to be, a spoiler or someone who's there to lift up ideas and the values that he believes in, which is, of course, how he pitched his campaign initially. And on the Republican side, you know, it's kind of a mess. I think John would agree with me. Yeah, it looks like Trump is going to have the most delegates going into the convention. It's now impossible for Ted Cruz to get that magic number by the time of the convention in July in Cleveland. But the question is, will Trump have enough? And what will happen at the convention? Will he be able to be nominated on the first ballot if it goes to a second ballot at the Republican convention? Does that mean that somebody like Cruz could rise up? Certainly that's the argument that the Cruz campaign is making, that at least if there's a second ballot or even a third ballot, that that's where he could become the Republican nominee.
Turning back to you, John Fortier, to talk about the convention itself, the Republican convention, to what extent it might be contested if Donald Trump does not reach that magic number, the 1,237 delegates. What are some scenarios in your view?
Well, first we have to remember we haven't seen an open convention in a very long time. We can go back to 1976 where Gerald Ford didn't quite have enough delegates over Ronald Reagan going into the convention, but still won on the first ballot. And then to go further back, you have to go back many years to see a really contentious convention. So this would be a thing for us all to watch. What are the scenarios? Well, one is that Donald Trump gets the 1,237 delegates right away. Now, a lot in the party still might not be happy with Donald Trump. Some may not support him in the general election. But if he gets the 1,237, he will be the nominee of the Republican Party. Another scenario is he falls a little bit short. I don't know what number that is, 50 delegates short, maybe 100 at the most. And probably is able to pick up delegates in the unpledged delegates out there. There's a universe of delegates that are still free to vote however they want. Maybe a little trickier for him, but he might get there. If he falls a little short of that, I think that's where things really open up. If Donald Trump, as Igor said, will absolutely have the most delegates, will have the most votes cast for him, but it might not be a majority. And then with the convention, when you get to the second or third ballots, when most of those delegates are free to vote for whomever they want, they don't have to vote for Donald Trump as they do in the first ballot, they might turn to Ted Cruz, or perhaps they could turn to some other third candidate. Maybe John Kasich, who's in the race, or maybe another candidate who's not. Some news this week has been that a choice that many Republicans would like, Paul Ryan, has pretty categorically said he won't do it. And I think there's some question as to who might want to do this, because if one comes in out of the blue, it will be a very divided party with the Trump supporters being very unhappy. But that is the most chaotic scenario, an open convention which goes to someone else. But the possibility of Trump winning outright, of the convention maybe turning to Cruz if they're not going to take Trump, or to turn to really a person who hasn't won very many delegates like John Kasich, or somebody who hasn't won delegates at all.
Turning back to you, Igor, to comment on what you think may happen. Mr. Trump is dead set on becoming the nominee. He says, I have the majority of voters behind me, Republican, and he's worried about the rules. He's making threats that if he is not chosen, there might be, I'm not sure if he said violence, but some major trouble.
Yeah, so, there very well might be. I mean, you look at the people who support Donald Trump, and they're no, you know, wallflowers, if you will. But who knows how they're going to react to that kind of scenario? Of course, this has been an outsider's election, and any whiff of the establishment usurping the voice of the people, of the voters, isn't going to go over well. But the question of who would be able to be that white knight and ride in is a big open question. And no matter who it is, if we're at that stage and it ends up being Paul Ryan, despite his protests of saying, oh, it will never be me or somebody else, you wonder how that's going to work logistically. You know, you can't just turn a switch and build an entire campaign operation that Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and, well, Trump to a lesser degree, but certainly Cruz have been building out for years and for months and months and months. And so it's going to be very difficult for this candidate to kind of come in to not just unify the party, but to also build the infrastructure you need in the key states and across America to run a really competitive race against Hillary Clinton, who has, you know, very talented people working for her and has been at this for quite some time. So either way, with Trump and all of his baggage and all of his problems and his crazy high unfavorables, or with an alternative, assuming it's not Ted Cruz, the Republican Party, I think, understands, rightly so, they're in a very difficult spot this election.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier, political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Igor Volsky, from whom you just heard. He's deputy director of the Center for American Progress Action Fund, and that's a liberal think tank based here in Washington. We're discussing the state of play for Democrats and Republicans in the aftermath of the New York nominating contests. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Cameron Butt from Rawalpindi, Pakistan, but he resides in Kuwait City. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. Well, back to you, John Fortier, and I want to back up very briefly to get a primer on delegates versus popular votes for our audience. Talk about the importance of delegates, why we have this system.
Well, without going too much into the long history, we've had political conventions for the big parties for many years. Early on, those conventions basically brought together all the states and the party people from those states to select a nominee. But there wasn't really Democratic input or elections related to this. It would be the governor or the party bosses in Wisconsin coming and meeting with the similar people from California and coming to a consensus about a nominee. So it would be an insider process of bargaining, and then that's how you select your presidential candidate. Starting in the beginning of the 20th century, we started to introduce these primaries, let the people speak. And some states had them. And over time, we've gotten to a place where almost all the states have some way that the people can vote. Now, some of them are caucuses, they're lower turnout. There's a few places with conventions. There are even a few places where the insiders are still picking the delegates. So it's a very complicated system. These delegates are the people that go to the convention, and they're the ones who ultimately vote to see who will be the nominee for the Republican and the Democratic parties. Again, on the Republican side, you need 1,237 of them to be the nominee. I think the argument on both sides is, how democratic should this process be? It's gotten pretty democratic compared to what it was. The people have a big say. But there are some undemocratic aspects or some aspects where the party tries to remain in control. On the Democratic side, the superdelegates, they're people who are elected officials and governors and others, party leaders who have a special vote in addition to the delegates the people select. And on the Republican side, there definitely are states that have some of the delegates who are not going to be pledged to the winner. So even though Donald Trump won a state, some of the delegates might not go to him. Some states have all of their delegates up for grabs. And here's where Donald Trump is complaining and saying, look, Ted Cruz and some of the establishment are trying to get some of these unelected delegates on the other side. He will have the best Democratic argument, small d Democratic argument. I've won the most votes. I've won the most delegates. But he might not make the 1,237 majority he needs, partly because of this small group of less democratically or not democratically elected set of delegates that are out there.
Who aren't necessarily committed.
Yeah, most of the delegates are bound to the candidates who win the state or win the district on the first vote. So Donald Trump won according to the rules of a state. There are delegates who have to vote for Donald Trump. In some cases, there's a lot of bargaining going on in the states who those people will be. And Donald Trump is complaining that the Cruz campaign has helped elect some of these delegates who will have to vote for Trump because they're required to on the first vote. But really, once they're free, if there's a second vote or a third vote, they're free to do what they want. They actually might be more Cruz people or more party people and be against Trump. So there's definitely a strong Democratic element, but there's some party insider aspects to these delegates that Donald Trump will complain if he doesn't get the nomination.
But no superdelegates on the Republican side.
Not technically superdelegates in the same way, but there are some delegates who are not even pledged to a candidate from the beginning. So there's some states that have had different processes, or some of their delegates or all their delegates have some freedom. Most of the delegates are bound, though, to somehow the winner of the state or district, depending on the rules of the state.
Igor Volsky, anything to add or subtract to this question of delegates versus the popular vote and how we elect our nominees for the presidential race?
Well, on the Democratic side, there's been some debate about whether or not these superdelegates, these party leaders, are in a legitimate role to give Hillary, in this case, pledging their support to her despite what the people in those states may have voted for. And I think that's an argument, that's a conversation that Democrats need to have. And in the next election, maybe there will be reforms. But certainly, initially at least, Bernie Sanders thought that these superdelegates represented an undemocratic feature in the process, that only the votes of the people should count, that the people choose the delegates, and then the delegates vote for the candidate. Now he's in this process of wooing the superdelegates to come over to his side and support him. I don't think, and John may correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's been an instance on the Democratic side where the superdelegates really undermined the votes of the people, that even in 2008 in that contested primary between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, when it was clear that Obama was going to be the nominee, the superdelegates who had pledged themselves to Hillary Clinton eventually kind of walked over to Obama because that's where the Democratic primary voters are. And I think the same thing will happen here. So it has raised this issue, or should the Democratic Party still have superdelegates, or is this an old system that we can get rid of?
Well, back to you, John Fortier, to talk about the way forward on the Republican side. If Mr. Trump actually prevails, how do you think he will fare against Hillary Clinton if indeed she emerges as the Democratic nominee, looking at the demographics, looking at the issues and other things that are going to determine the outcome?
Well, I think that there are some strong and justified reasons for Republicans to worry about Donald Trump as a general election nominee. I mean, just a simple point is that some of the polls we see now today, the matchup polls where you'd say, well, what if Donald Trump ran against Hillary Clinton in the fall, show that he's behind. He tends to emphasize he's a strong candidate. Those polls don't show that now. Now, they are a long way away, and things can change, and there's some dynamics that certainly could change on that. But, I mean, some other underlying difficulties for the Trump nomination is that his negatives are extremely high. Hillary Clinton's actually are quite high, too, but by comparison, Donald Trump's are even higher. So I think there's some reasons to think that he goes in with some weakness and could very well lose that election in the fall. One thing I think we're going to watch over the next few months, both in the campaign for the delegates, is that Donald Trump says and is starting to upgrade his campaign and make it look a little more like a traditional campaign and bring in people who are more connected to the party. It's hard to imagine that he becomes a traditional candidate. He is such an outsider and has his way. But to the extent that he does, and he says he's going to professionalize and moderate his voice, that might be a way in which some of these worries that Republicans have about him as the nominee will be allayed. That's the scenario where he gets the nomination without so much controversy. If we really go to the convention and either he barely ekes it out because people try to take away from him, or it goes to someone else, I think then we will have perhaps an even worse scenario for Republicans, a divided party with Trump voters unhappy, hard to turn out the party in the fall. So both scenarios don't look that great, but the less certain one is, will Donald Trump start to look a little bit more like a traditional Republican if he becomes the nominee and upgrades and professionalizes his campaign and message?
Turning to you, Igor, to kind of look ahead to the general election, should Mr. Trump become the Republican nominee, notwithstanding his attempts to sort of professionalize his operation and sound more presidential, if you will, what are some of the obstacles or what are some of the challenges on the Democratic side, in your view, should Hillary Clinton clinch the nomination, given that Bernie Sanders has really made major inroads, has gone much farther than many would have expected, and has a major constituency, particularly among young people? And how will this play out?
Well, you know, on Hillary, she will need to find a way to speak to those Sanders supporters, those younger voters who she's losing to Bernie Sanders in state after state. She used to say, I don't know if she does anymore, that you may not be for me, but I'm for you. She's going to really need to fine-tune that pitch and figure out what it is about Bernie Sanders that appeals to that young demographic and then pull in some of those voters, figure out how to communicate to them. But on the Republican side, you know, in this conversation about Donald Trump professionalizing his campaign and modernizing his tone, what's
moderating, you mean?
Moderating, I'm sorry, moderating his tone. What's often lost is the fact that his policies remain the same. I mean, he would ban Muslims. He would deport all undocumented immigrants. He would pull out of America's alliances around the world. These are incredibly bizarre, offensive policies to the overwhelming majority of Americans. So the fact that Donald Trump said Senator Cruz instead of Line Ted, and the media thought that this was some great moment of Donald Trump.
And actually did go back to say Line Ted today, I will note. But yeah.
you turn on the TV and you think it's just some great moment of how professional and serious Donald Trump is. Is frankly just a lot of baloney and crap. When you get down to who Donald Trump is and how he treats people who aren't rich white people and what his policies would do to those communities, it is frankly very scary and very, very troubling. And if Republicans think, as they did after Romney lost, that they need to attract Hispanic voters, women, African Americans, young voters, gay Americans, in order to win a national election, really build a coalition where they could win across the country, Donald Trump is not that candidate. And no matter how much new bear hugs the media gives him because he's now so professional and his speeches aren't as long and rambling and he's going to use teleprompters next week when he gives a speech, none of that is going to take away the fact that his policies are horrible. And Hillary Clinton's going to point that out.
Turning back to you, John Forte, no question, notwithstanding some of the problems on the Democratic side, the differences between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, they certainly pale next to what is going on in the Republican primary with Donald Trump. One cannot ignore the policies or his positions, which are really out there. I mean, they are really far out. They're scaring many of our allies overseas if he should win the nomination and the presidency. So with that, what are your final thoughts?
Well, look, I wouldn't say it quite the way Igor would. He is putting his finger on a real issue and the position that Donald Trump has taken. First, quickly, on the Democratic side, while there's a division between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, I think it's more traditional. It tends to be that voters come home, and I think Bernie Sanders voters will come home after a month or so of thinking about it. They'll want Hillary Clinton rather than the alternative. The divisions are stronger on the Republican side, and it partly is because of these issues. Some of it is issues really that conservatives care about. They think he will walk away from economic positions. He will walk away from alliances with Europe and things that many conservatives are committed to. So I do think the issues, a tamer and more moderate Donald Trump would not look still like a traditional nominee, and that could have some pluses, but it could also have some very significant minuses. He still makes the case that he is appealing to white working class voters, some of whom are not in the Republican Party and might come over. And issues like immigration, which are not elite issues, will help him get some of those voters. The bigger question is, even said in a more professional way and more in the party, a lot of people have said they won't be able to vote for Trump. How large will that number be? We don't know. But it is a risk for the Republican Party, even a Donald Trump that has a slightly or even significantly different set of issue focuses that, you know, change the Republican Party, at least for this election. He is not a traditional candidate on the issues. Certainly he isn't a traditional kind of candidate in terms of his demeanor.
As former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin said, you cannot put lipstick on a pig. But these are still early days. We have many primaries to go, but we have to be realistic and look at the numbers. And I'm going to give the final word to you, Igor, especially with respect to the Democratic side and Bernie Sanders, how you think he will conduct himself in the remaining days, even though he is falling behind Hillary Clinton, and to what extent he can or will be willing to persuade his large constituency to eventually back Hillary Clinton.
I agree with John. I think that at the end of the day, when the Bernie Sanders campaign comes to an end, and I think it will, just realistically based on what the map and the math look like, that he's going to campaign with Hillary and he's going to unite with Hillary. And he's going to say, as John did, that we can either unite as a Democratic Party and Hillary's going to champion these issues of economic inequality that I've been talking about, or we can go to a world where we have a massive tax cut for the super wealthy. which is, of course, the Donald Trump economic plan. And given that choice, Democratic voters are, as John says, going to come home. And on Sarah Palin, you can't put lipstick on a pig. Who would have known how prophetic Sarah Palin is? And we're about to find out.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Igor Volsky, deputy director of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. As always, gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Curtis Bynum. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.